and welcome to a new episode of the Monday Mile podcast. This week's guest is a rocking one. He's an actor, comedian, and television presenter. He's kind of got the triple threat going on, and he's ruddy good at all of them. To you and I, he's best known for his comedic persona and presenting shows such as Take Me Out and one of my personal favourites, BBC's Top Gear. Paddy McGuinness, welcome to the Mile.
First of all,
I'm going to ask you to put your phone on airplane
mode.
Yeah,
that is absolutely disgraceful for a triple threat like myself, who's in and out of the industry, knows it inside out, bang, phone on.
Let's go airplane.
I've just muted that bad boy, don't you worry about that. You've picked an absolutely fantastic Monday.
We certainly have. How are you?
I'm all right. Now, obviously, fantastic podcast, but you didn't think it through.
What do you mean? I didn't think it through. Hey, hang on a minute.
Monday Mile.
Yeah.
Right, firstly, who likes Mondays? No one. Friday Mile, better. Everyone's gone, I'm having a bit of that. It's the weekend. Monday Mile, not interested.
You're not a fan of a Monday then?
Nervous Bob Geldof. Boomtown Rats. You're too young for that. But the thing is, it's not a day really. I say that though, once you've had kids, actually Monday becomes your Friday.
I was going to say, send them off to school.
Exactly.
You're living the dream though.
Exactly. Back in the day, I'd be like, Friday, here we go, brilliant weekend. Now I'm going Monday, fantastic.
Now,
get them in.
You said about choosing a good day for the podcast.
Yeah.
We've chosen a great day in my opinion. However, the location, you said the Tex Nose Tea Room.
Yeah.
Paddy McGuinness.
Let me get this gate for you.
It's closed and it's raining.
Well, technically, Teg's Nose Tea Room is open, but it looks like a kid's party's taken away. Get up this way. Let's get out of this draft.
Now, are you much of a walker? You've got all the gear. Look at me.
I love it. Yeah, no, honestly, I feel bad today because I'm like, we'll get out, we'll have a what? And you're like, you look fantastic, but it's not walking attire, is it? And I'm now trying to find us routes where
we're avoiding the wind and the rain.
Yeah, and mud and everything else. I'm trying to keep us on this stuff, really.
I can honestly say, I didn't expect you to be such an outdoors adventure man.
Well, what happened was, about 2 years ago, a company got in touch with me, as they do, outdoor gear. They want to do some work with me. And I've always liked being outdoors, but I've never been an avid walker, ever. So I did some work for this company. But the work involved being out in places like this, and I thought, do you know what? When I got home, I was like, I've got to feel brilliant. It's just that thing, innit, where, without sounding too kind of wank, can we say that on a podcast?
Of course we can.
You know, it really cleared my mind, it made me feel so good, and I never realised how much that can help you. So I'd get out now and again and do a little bit, and I loved it. And now I'm out in all weather, as you can see.
Yeah, you're really kicked to the nines. I'm digging the orange.
Well, I wear this because I've got a tendency to get lost.
Really?
So if I do, I think helicopter, they give it, is there massive tangerine rolling around the hills.
So you take it seriously. How often would we find you?
I wouldn't say seriously, but I enjoy it.
The fact you're thinking of rescue operations must mean that you're putting yourself in some relatively exposed conditions?
No, that's just natural anxiety in everything. I think that comes from being a parent. You think and worry about everything. So that naturally just stays with you. So when I'm out and about, I'm thinking, oh, if I do my ankle here, I'm knackered. How am I going to get home? And this, that and the other. But I love it. Even when it's like this, if you've got the right gear on, it's nice.
It is, isn't it? When you've got the right gear on.
I mean, do you want these gloves? You've not even got gloves on. Do you want these? Here.
No, you know
take
what?
Take these. Come on, get them on.
Oh, what a gentleman.
I'll put my hand in my pocket.
That is very kind of you, Pat.
Dear God in heaven, get them on.
There you go.
There you are.
We're sorted. Okay, we are now officially ready for our northern hike. So take us back to the start of your TV career. How does one go from just being your casual northern lad to essentially running the show across a multitude of platforms?
I think, like most things in life, it's about being at the right place at the right time.
Yeah.
Because we did Phoenix Nights and Max and Paddy and various bits and bats. And what I kind of did back then, because I was never thinking to myself, I want to work in telly, I want to have a career in entertainment. Once I got into it and I saw the potential for earning money for what seemed to me like very little work, I thought, ooh, that's a good job. Because ever since I can remember, I've always worked, even when I was at school, I had Saturday jobs, and I was kind of sick of slogging my bloody heart out and not getting very far. So what I did, I put a tour on. I always had the ability to make people laugh. So I put a massive tour on, like massive. Sold out everywhere, but it was shite. But I didn't know that at the time.
Right.
In my ignorance, yeah. I just threw together a set. Like, I wrote my first tour, and if you watched it, you'd see why, in about 2 days. And it was just, because I had no, again, without sounding too, like, lovey, yeah. I had no real respect for stand-up or the craft or anything, really. I just kind of thought, all right, do that, make some money. And I did, I made a lot of money. And then at the end of it, once all the dust had settled, I thought, oh, dropped a bollock there, really. You know, I should have just put a bit of thought into that. But anyhow, it's all a learning curve, isn't it? And then, but on the back of that then, I was doing bits and bats of things, and I did a pilot for Channel 4, because Phoenix Nights were Channel 4, and I did a lot of work for them back in the day. And I did a pilot, which was Take Me Out, and the boss at the time, at Channel 4, a guy called Kevin Ligor, yeah, didn't want it, so he passed on it. And then the guy who was running the show at ITV, a guy called Peter Fincham, liked it.
Go on, that's so all we got, you need. You just
so, yeah,
a little break, hey?
Exactly. So they showed him on the off chance. He really liked it. And it was like, even him seeing it was an accident. It was one of those kind of things. And Susie Lamb, who's a good friend of mine, is the exec on Take Me Out, kind of put it in front of Peter Fincham's nose. Go and get yourself around that way there.
That is a paddle and a half.
And he said, I really like it. And she was honestly thinking he was going to go with an ITV name. You know, so at the time, I think the person kind of doing a lot on ITV mainstream was like Vernon Kay. When she rang me up saying ITV want to do it, I was like, give Vernon me best, fellow Bolton lad, spreading the love. And they went, no, they want you do it. Now, I had zero experience of Saturday Night TV, like I had really zero experience of doing a national tour. But you've got to go for it. And this is my... I've always kept this philosophy of, if it's offered to you and you think it's in your realms of possibly doing it, then just go for it, because why regret it later on in life, you know? Now listen, if I got a call tomorrow saying they're doing Hamlet in the West End and they want you to play, you know, I'd be like, I can't do it.
Don't know if that's my
because
bag.
I just bought, you know, other stuff. It's like when Top Gear come around. I love Top Gear, you know, and I was like, had nothing to do with the show, never been on it as a guest, nothing at all. And I was like, I knew it had caused a lot of,
bit of a stir,
friction on Twitter and that, but listen, what doesn't? So I kind of thought, but luckily for me, my era and where I came through as a teenager in my early 20s, there were no Twitter. So really, all that social media now, and it can be in a horrendous place, but I kind of, a bit old to be worried by it, to be honest. I feel for a lot of young people now coming through, you know, who literally
live
do something
it,
like Love Island, say.
Yeah.
And then they thrust into public limelight, get pulled apart on Twitter. And, you know, by the time they're 21, 22, they think, Jesus Christ, I'm not with anything. Or, you know, because they listen to these opinions online. So for
world
me,
online can totally tear somebody apart and destroy them.
Of course it can, but my philosophy is, you know, we all get exposed to it, but it's how you kind of, if you let it sit with you or not. And it's not easy. It's not, you know, sometimes my biggest thing is if someone says anything about me, coming from a comedy background, I just instantly want to annihilate them.
Go on.
But
that's
once
the way,
you,
right?
but once you do, you honestly, you've kind of, it feels good at the time, but after, when you think about it, you think, oh, I shouldn't have done that, or I shouldn't have done this. And ultimately as well, in our job, it can quickly spin round where they go, oh, it's all right for you having a go at them if you're doing this, that, and you've got money and all the, you know, it always gets spun round. So I don't know, you've got to take it all with a pinch of salt.
Have you got an example of that situation where you have spun it back round and it's bitten you in the backside?
No, not really. You
just learn the lesson quickly.
the tricky thing is, like, you know, I do a lot of shows for the BBC and I'm aware of the BBC's reputation as well.
Yes.
Now, with all that kind of uproar with Lineker, he's a really prominent figure. Where me, myself, when I look at working for the Beeb, I've worked for every channel over the years, and from a comedy background, you can kind of, you can get away with a bit more. So, you know, sometimes I might be on my Instagram talking about, you know, whatever. I could be talking about a packet of biscuits, but I might start effing and blinding while I'm doing it. But it doesn't worry me because that's me and that's how I am, and I'm coming from, you know, and it's
and you've
kinda,
always been that way.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not like, oh, he's a presenter on the BBC and he was effing on his Insta. It's like, yeah, because that's my personal thing and that's what it is. So, but I do still understand in our job, you know, whether you like it or not, some people will look up to you. So you've always got to be wary of setting a little bit of a good example. But it's impossible to be absolutely
perfect
constantly.
Yeah.
And no one is.
Why do you think you can, let's use the word, get away in a situation of using the occasional Fs and blinders, yeah, whereas, say, maybe somebody, Gary, can't? Is it because of your cross spreads in channel?
Firstly, so like Gary, wouldn't you know, that's not him anyhow, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, he's a nice guy, I've worked with him, and he is what he is, and people look up to him and what have you, in a sense that they probably wouldn't to most other people. So he's a different animal, really.
Yeah.
But he's his own man, it's up to him what he does in life. You know, when all that kicked off, I was watching it all online and I was like, Jesus, I mean, it's just mad the way things are at the minute with the press and social media, how everything's magnified 1,000,000%.
It's kind of scary.
It is.
Actually, the magnitude of, I suppose, could you call it a slip up or slip of the tongue? Whether you agree or disagree with it, it's created UK national pandemonium.
Well, Luke, it is, but also as well, it's something for people to talk about, and everyone loves the next bit
of
gossip.
A little bit of gossip.
And it literally will be gone.
Yeah, it will.
Within another week.
Hopefully.
I genuinely believe that. I mean, when this is, Lewis, this might be only 6 months, and you're going, what's he still talking about that for? But
we'll have to turn it around quicker than that.
Yeah.
We've got a good team at the Monday Mile.
I've got a little shelter here on the Monday Mile. Are we allowed to stop, or do you want to keep walking?
Yeah, I'd love to see the shelter.
I'm just thinking about the wind and chat. Here we are. See that there? And I have no idea what that is. It looks like some old machinery. It looks like an old crane or something. Hang on.
I'm quite enjoying this extreme walk. I reckon this definitely...
Get on me back here. Get on me. Hang on. Jump on. Right, I've got the boots on. I'll walk us through this lot here.
This has never happened on the mile. Right now, we are on top of some sort of Highland Hill.
I'm going to say on top of Paddy McGuinness.
Well, I am on top of Paddy McGuinness. Traipsing through mud.
This is
sheltered.
There we are, in here.
Oh, wow, check this out.
Check out the den.
Is this the first time in this den?
It is the first time. I've walked past it a lot.
And always been curious.
But I've always been curious.
Oh,
and
wow.
It is one of them things where I've ever... Oh, look at that. It's proper gears and there are all sorts of stuff in here. Come up in here.
Come and have a look.
Look at this. Engineering 101.
Brilliant.
Well, yeah, I always walked past it, but I thought...
No reason to stop. You're always on a mission,
no reason
right?
to stop. And looking at it thinking, it's probably stuff in there I don't want to see.
Yeah.
But it's quite clean, actually. We're all right. We're
no,
okay.
No, we'll take it.
This is a nice little respite.
So when it comes to shows like Take Me Out, and in particular newer shows for you, Question of Sport, Top Gear, is there a certain amount of pressure when it comes to taking on the reins? And do you feel that?
I think for me personally, the pressure I felt it more on Question of Sport than Top Gear, because sport... Weirdly enough, in this country, I remember Freddie, when I got the job, and he rang me up and he said, oh God, be careful because it can be, you know, we're talking about how it is online and stuff. And he said he stood in on a sports breakfast show, have been Five Live or whatever, I don't know which one it was, but he stood in for a month and he said the abuse he got, and he said, I'm an ex-sports Ashes and all that, and he said, even I got abuse.
Yeah.
So there's something about sport, people get a bit militant.
But it's almost a bit culty, right?
Well, my thing has always been, especially on a show, and I've been on that show as a guest numerous times, and absolutely loved it.
It's good fun.
Sue Barker is just master, know what I mean?
She's incredible.
But anyone in our job has no control about people leaving or staying or whatever. You just get asked to do a gig. And like I said to you before, I'm not going to turn around and say no to something like that, because it's a show I loved. But essentially, people go, what does he know about sport? Well, not that much compared to a sports person who does that particular sport. But I love sport. And what's even better for me is I have the answers.
I'm
there to read, which is a bit of a stretch for me, got to be honest. But I'm there to read, talk to the guests, make them feel comfortable, and give them the answers. I'm not there to figure it out. So I'm like, well, that part of the show, I can actually do. I've done it loads of times over 20-odd years, so I've actually got the experience of doing that.
And probably better than a person that's spent 15 years of their life solely doing one sport.
Well, Luke, you've been on Question of Sport, and it amazes me, and I don't know why it should really, but the amount of people who come on and go, don't ask me about any sports apart from what I do.
Yeah.
But because you're that focused, when you're a sports person, you're that focused on what you do, you probably lose sight of everything else around you, But when Fred come on as a guest, he said, can my specialist subject be darts?
And brilliant. Brilliant.
I think you're pretty much known for cricket more than darts, if I'm being honest, Fred. But that's what he wanted, and that's how it is. But yeah, there's always going to be stick, and there's always going to be flack. And all you can do is get your head down, give it your best shot, And ultimately, it is what it is at the end of the day.
Now, the first time I went on Question of Sport with you as a host, I've got really vivid memories of you grabbing my skateboard.
Thank God you said skateboard. I thought, it's one of them. Did he do that to you as well?
We've got him in a shelter and we're ready to throw him under the bus.
Yeah. You were drunk at the time.
And you hopped on my skateboard and production, you could see their eyes just flash before them. And I was there in like heels, sort of helping guide you across stage. You certainly know how to have a laugh. Has comedy always been in your blood?
I think so, yeah. And I think the good thing about comedy as well is, even if you're in a really bad situation, say, I've had friends, I've been to funerals with friends who've lost parents, I've lost my parents, but even at a funeral, someone will say something or you'll pick something out and it makes you laugh. And just instantly, it just sort of alleviates the actual sorrow and everything else for that split second. It's just nice to have that ability and to be able to do that. And you've got to pick your moments, but it's definitely helped me just throughout my life anyway, having a sense of humour.
Did you always know you were quite funny?
I think I've worked in loads of jobs, when I've been in the staff room, I was never like an office clown type of person, but I always knew if I was in the staff room, I'd get a laugh. But the difficulty is, we all know people in work who are hilarious, who make you laugh. Mm. But you put them on stage with a microphone and it goes out the window.
It goes flat, right? Now, not the vibe.
No. For me, with that first tour, it was just sheer stubbornness and balls and just a kind of a throw caution to the wind attitude that I did it. But having said that about the tour, going, I wasn't happy with it, I'd still get a standing ovation. So it's like, it's bonkers. It's like a bit of an head wrecker, because you're going, people seem to like that, but I don't like it. It's weird. I can't explain it
The
properly.
Only way I could relate to that is, it's maybe you internally thinking, that's not me putting my best foot forward, because you can do better.
Exactly.
So I think
it's being lazy as well.
True,
because you kind of think, lazy, and you think, let's get it done. You know what I mean? And I don't have to spend time months and months writing and going out doing warm-ups and everything else, so I kind of just did it and that with that. But you know, it's character building, makes you stronger, and you know, you learn by your mistakes.
When it comes to a show like Take Me Out,
is it tissue in your pocket?
Do you want your glove?
No, do I? No, just start feeling a bit thingy, then go on.
Do you want to just, we're zero judgment here, we're cash.
Look away. Oh, God.
I've honestly not wiped my nose on your gloves, Paddy, honestly.
Yeah, I know, yeah. I'll take them off you, I'll go, thanks for that, straight in bin.
When it comes to a show like Take Me Out,
yeah,
is it true that you did a dating show yourself?
Yeah.
As a guest?
Yeah.
Previously?
Yeah.
Did that give you a better understanding of...
Absolutely.
What those contestants were experiencing.
So I worked in the leisure centre, and in the staff room there was a sign up on the wall saying, do you want to be on a dating show on TV? Now back then, you've got to remember, no social media, no, you know, so to be on telly was like a massive deal. Like these days it feels like you put the telly on and you're like, who's this person? Like someone new on all the time. Yeah. But back then it was like a big deal going on telly. So me and my mates went, yeah, we'll do that. And we went to Granada in Manchester for an audition. I think six of us went, and only me got through. And at the time, I'm going, yes, have that. But years after, we're all, no, typical, it would be me. And we did it in Manchester, and that with that. So anyhow, that with that. And then years later, when you get well known, I think a clip of it come on like before they were famous, and then every bloody chat show went on, everyone shows a clip, and you have to kind of go, oh, where have you found that? You know, I'd seen it about a bloody million times. But anyhow, that's that. So when I were hosting Take Me Out, which was kind of a cross between a dating show and an entertainment show, really, some of the lads would be absolutely shitting themselves. Because it is, you know, I used to come down in the lift on every show at the start, and even though I knew all the girls and I'd been out talking to the audience, even me, I had that little feeling in me. Because as you're coming down that lift and the music's blurring, the lights are, but you, and the girl, you're like, oh, Jesus Christ, you know. So these lads were proper breaking it. And some of them would be worried about what they'd sort of agreed to do as the party piece, you know. And it was all what they wanted to do, we went with. We didn't tell them to do anything. And I used to say, Luke, lads, I've been on a dating show in black silk boxer shorts dancing, you know, with Claudia Winkleman at the back of me. I'm going, don't worry about it. It doesn't define you going forward. It's just a bit of fun. It's a little bit of fun in a moment in time that when we're all dead, no one cares about it anyway.
That's such a nice way of putting it. And I think you can extract that and put it into any situation.
Of course you can.
Whether it's sport, whether it's messing something up on telly. Well, so that made you feel a sympathy towards them. Did it help when it came to...
It wasn't sympathy. It was just I could relate to what they were going through. And I was saying, Luke, you know, I'm not saying don't worry about it because you'll end up hosting a dating show and Top Gear and everything. I don't always work like that. But I was saying, Luke, it's not that big a deal in the bigger scheme of things. It's a bit of fun. Your mates will have a laugh when you're down the pub or whatever. You move on, you know what I mean? And it is what it is. And every lad and girl who's been on Take Me Out now, because I did it over 10 years, you know, if some of them walk past me now, I probably wouldn't even recognise them. Certain girls and certain lads I still remember. So that's my point. I'm going, look, people just soon forget and get over it. Don't worry about it. You know, it is what it is kind of thing.
Any tips for me if I make it onto any dating shows?
What kind of dating show person
I think that's my next calling.
Are you a Take Me Out? Are you a Love Island?
I'm definitely not a Love Island.
You're not a Love Island. First dates?
Oh, yeah, that'd be
first
good.
First dates, sit down with a meal.
Yeah, yeah.
That'd be all right, wouldn't it?
A bit sophisticated, yeah. I mean, you've seen me today. I reckon I've got... I can do it all. I could have turned up in my joggers, but I went for the sophisticated look. I mean, why not? Paddy's taking me hiking up north in the rain.
No, technically, they do look like a hiking boot.
I mean, they are.
They're white.
They're a hiking fashion boot.
Yeah.
I reckon we take them back out to the...
Let's get out there, right.
Back out to the mud. Right.
Back out into the wilds.
But I want the advice. What do we think? I think that would be good.
I reckon... I think the thing for that is, that looks like a solid path. Get up.
Yeah, let's go that way.
I think if you can sit down and have a bite to eat, if there's nothing to talk about, you can still talk about the food, can't you?
Yeah, that's
you know,
true.
You've got old Fred Lent over your shoulder every 2 minutes, butting in. But that aside, you'll be all right.
Yeah, that's That's some good advice, that.
Oh,
are we going? We're going
back
again.
There we go.
We're crossing the ridge. You're strong, Paddy.
Yeah, get yourself.
I did say off camera that you're looking very lean. What's the secret to that?
Well, I'm just literally started training again. I'm 49 and I've always been into training, but I did one thing about I think it was about 5 years ago. I did one of these kind of a men's health type of before and after thing. And I look great with my shirt off, but when I had clothes on, jeez, I look like death warmed up. So, and I thought, living in the UK, probably once a year you get your shirt off.
It's pretty rare, isn't it?
It's pretty rare. So, for me, it's like all these lads on Love Island, like, all ripped up. I'm thinking, that's covered up most of the time in the UK. Yeah. So, I did that and enjoyed it, but I thought I couldn't maintain that level of fitness and training. So now I just train for myself, but again, being 49, I like knowing that I'll be fitter than pretty much the average 49-year-old man. I just like being a little bit fitter and a little bit stronger. I see some other people, I've got friends who are like absolutely goosed. You know what I mean? I think you've got to look after yourself a little bit. And I'm, you know, you look at my Instagram, I love a pizza, I love a curry, I love a beer. So I'm not a, you know, you must weigh up 4 mung beans in the morning and punch yourself in the face and go for a 6-mile run.
Not straight up clean living.
No.
But it sounds like you've got a good balance. What's the secret to the lean physique you're currently rocking?
It's literally, I mean, you know, when you look at fitness as an industry, it's not $1 billion, it's trillion.
Yeah.
$1 trillion industry, and the reason it's a $1 trillion industry is everyone wants a shortcut. So you look at these bloody protein powders, pills, diets, various ways of and essentially all it is more calories out than what you put in.
Yeah.
So if like yesterday, it was the weekend, so me and the kids, we got a pizza in, a trifle from the shop.
Oh, lovely.
And nothing touched the sides. But I knew today I'd get out and do a little bit. You know, before I've come here today, I did a little bit in the gym.
Nice.
And then come out and do this. And we're not killing ourselves here, but it's enough. You know, and that's all I do. If I have a big session, I make sure I put the time in to do it after. But for me, keeping in shape is so simple, but everyone wants that bloody...
The key,
the magic pill kind of thing to make. And it doesn't work like that. I've got a mate who's like, oh, got these new protein bars. I went, that makes no odds.
No, it doesn't.
Unless you're doing the training.
A carrot of difference.
Just eating a protein bar is actually not going to do you any good whatsoever.
No. Protein in, movement out.
Exactly. You know, is what it is. I don't kill myself with training, but some days I might get up and do a really hard session just because I'm in mood.
Do you run as well?
I've never got on with it, and it's because my legs, they're like bloody that.
Sticks.
And honestly, least thing, my calves go, I pull a muscle. Even if I warm up and everything. I've learned over the years. I played football all my life and I was always all right, but it's as I've got into my 40s and a little bit older that I just notice I pull my car and I'm like, it puts me out for that long and it does me head in.
Yeah, and then again, it's about the continuity and you being there for your kids, right?
Exactly. So I kind of do what I know is comfortable for me and my body. You know, like I say, it's no good me going, oh, I'm going to sign up for a bloody ultra marathon or something. I'll never be able to do it.
No.
But
do that before you have kids. Yeah, anyone listening?
Yeah, exactly.
Hello, that's me right here.
Exactly. You don't even need training. If you've not had kids, you should be able to do anything.
Just rock up and bang it out.
Yeah, well, the energy levels are through the roof.
You've recently opened up in your BBC documentary about your kids and autism.
Yeah.
I can imagine being a man in the public eye and exposing your family and your honesty in a project as large as that, it's quite a tough asking.
Well, I'll give you an idea of how tough it was. It took about 5 or 6 years to actually get that made.
Wow.
because all these things you just point out, I mulled over for a very, very long time. And that was the reason we didn't show the kids' faces in it, because ultimately what I found, myself and Christine wanted to talk about it because we've been in so many horrendous situations and didn't know which way to turn, that us as celebrities should have the answer to everything, should have the best life and best this and best that. So I thought, if we actually talk about the difficulties we've had, if you're watching this and you're a single parent, for instance, you know, and you think, oh, I'm not going to complain much, you can look at us and go, well, actually, if they're talking about it and they're open about it and they're struggling, then, you know, what chance have I got? So I should be able to go out and talk about it and get in with a GP quicker and all the support in place quicker. Because it helped me when I was really, really struggling with stuff and I got really down and really depressed. What kind of snapped me out of it a little bit was hearing other people who were struggling. And there's a weird kind of kinship you have.
Yeah.
Where you're going, oh, I'm not on my own. You know, I suppose it's like depression and people who get really, really down probably feel that there's only them who are going through that, or no one else is going through that. And when you start talking to other people, it's when it makes you kind of go, do you know what? Oh, actually, I'm not on my own. And the thought of not being on your own in a bad situation just gives you a little bit of a lift, I think. So,
what was your biggest takeaway from sharing that experience with the public?
I think for me, it was the amount of people who got in touch through socials and what have you, especially men. You know, because blokes, there's no two ways about it. Listen, I'm a working class kind of, where I'm from, rough area. So you, as a bloke, you're kind of supposed to be breadwinner.
Hard face, no emotion,
exactly.
No tears.
Yeah, and I kind of think, you know, in when it comes to kids, maternally, you know, women just seem to have the upper hand. I was brought up by my mum on her own, and you know, it's like, I agree with that. I think they just do. And I think men, not all men, but most of us, you know, even if you just get handed a baby straight away, women just tend to seem to get on with it, whereas men are a bit more, oh my God, I've got a baby. Oh, what do I, which end works and this, that and the other. So talking about those struggles myself, again, as a person who, and there's no two ways about it, you do put on a front. On social, you know, I know people are more open now and I think it's a good thing, but I've never really been one for sitting down with my phone and, you know, going, today I've really struggled and I've done this and I've done, it's just not how I do things. But I've not got a problem with people who do that, because I think it's important to talk about stuff, but it's just, that's never been me. And most people,
I can relate to that, even as
exactly.
A female, I wouldn't
exactly
put everything out there. Did it change your relationship with expressing your emotion publicly?
Oh yeah, definitely. And even now, like, for me, it was like a bit of therapy, a bit like stand-up, really. You know, most stand-ups, when you're on stage, you're getting stuff off your chest, but you're doing it in a funny way, and you're doing it in a way where most people kind of probably agree with you or whatever, or people are too scared to say it. And it does, when you come off stage, you do feel like, oh God, a weight's off your shoulders and you feel great, you know. It's not long till you come back down again, but it is that. I think once you talk about things openly and get them out there, and especially if you've been bottling up for a long time, it does make you feel better. But now, with autism and stuff, and when people get in touch with me, I'm always keen to let people know I'm not an expert. Yeah. So, you know, people go, this is happening with my child and that's happening, and what do you think? And I'm going, I'm not qualified to give you those answers. All I can say as a parent, what we did worked for us. Yeah. But what works for one child might not work for another child. You know, every child and every adult's different. So certain things we've put in place for our kids to help with, like loud noises or certain foods and everything, might not work with someone else's kids. So it's about sharing the knowledge, and hopefully that some things you do, people might go, oh, actually, that does work for my kids. So you pick things, cherry pick things for yourself.
I can imagine that's extremely comforting for those parents that do have children with autism, that they can see. Again, there's this "if you can see it, you can be it" phrase that's used and bandied around often, but I can imagine there's a huge sense of togetherness and awareness shared when people have seen that documentary.
Of course, and I think that's the key word, really, awareness, you know. So a lot of parents with autistic children, you know, sometimes they can feel a bit frustrated when they're out, if the child's having a meltdown, because like any parent, there's a level of where you're thinking, oh God, everyone's looking at me, and they're thinking I'm a bad parent because my child's throwing themselves on the floor, or they're screaming, or they're thinking the child's a brat and spoiled or whatever. You know, these, and you can't knock people for having those thoughts. It's just ingrained in us as human beings. We just instantly make a decision on things. So once that awareness is out there, as people see a documentary or talk about it and they go, oh, I'm aware of what that is. You know, not everyone, but it's just little baby steps, really.
You touched on depression and experiencing that yourself and not really understanding what that process was. What did you do in that situation to help you through that? Because we found throughout this series of podcasts, a lot of people find just being outside is one thing that helped them. But what was it for you?
Well, I think firstly, it's knowing. So usually what happens with, and again, I'm no expert on this, but in my experience, I think with something like depression, or I was diagnosed as clinically depressed.
Wow.
So with
that hits hard, even hearing that.
I know, yeah. So with that, but I wasn't aware of it. And this is my point. You could be as low can be, and you probably haven't got any idea. It's the people who are around you who tell you. So what had happened with me is Christine or a few of my mates or a couple of my family members would sort of say things to me, "You're not yourself," or "Are you okay?" And you'd think, what are they always asking me that for?
Yeah.
But obviously you can't see it yourself, you know, and it's, you know, because it's like in your head, it's not like you've got a limp where people can spot it and you can spot it. And you go, oh, I've got a limp, I'll go to the physio, I'll go to, you know, sometimes you don't see, you know, you're just not aware of it.
So what was the key for you in turning that around?
I think there were just certain days where I felt myself, because of the job I do, which is a public-facing job.
You always got to turn up and put the front on, right?
I started resenting doing anything. I started resenting being in front of a crowd of people and making them laugh or whatever. Because I used to think, it's all right for you lot, but I'm going home and I feel like this, you know. And I started feeling getting a bit, I've never been that much of a person losing my temper much, but I could feel myself in certain situations getting wound up quicker.
Yeah.
And I just thought, that's not me, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now listen, I weren't going around throwing cups of tea at the bloody wall and shouting and bawling at everyone, but I could feel myself personally going, feeling that, you know, you get like that, a real anger straight away or whatever. I'm like, what? I shouldn't really be feeling that. So anyhow, I went seeing, and I've wrote about this in my book, I went seeing a therapist and it totally didn't work, and I left and I was like, that's a waste of money.
Really?
Like, yeah, it didn't work at all.
How
then interesting. I saw another one. He were rubbish in my eyes.
Yeah.
And I'd give up on it then. I was like, that's it. And it were only the place where I were going to got wind of what had happened and got in touch with me and sort of apologised and said, give us one more chance. And then this doctor got in touch with me. And as soon as I sat down with him, I thought,
this is the one.
This is it. I'm done. So I kind of look at therapy like buying shoes. So if you're a size 9 and you go into a shop, you can put a pair of size 9s on and you go, they're a bit tight then. Or you put a pair of size 9s and you go, actually, they're a bit too big. And then you get another pair of size and you go, they're perfect. And that's all it is. So it's about, it's not giving up on it. And I nearly did. So if you try therapy and you think that's not worked for me, that doesn't mean all therapy doesn't work. Just keep going until you find that one. It might take you bloody 6 times, 10 times, but it'll be worth it.
That's so interesting. Yeah. I've never heard that before.
Yeah, so I saw this this guy. I still see him now, but not regular. At the time, I'd be in with him every week, because I needed it. When he actually told me I was clinically depressed after I did this kind of
Did that make it worse? With,
well, no, I just kind of sat there. No, it made it better.
Oh, okay.
Because I was like, what? But when he said it and explained it, I thought, I am. And it was like, even that was an instant, oh.
Like a relief.
Yeah. And then from then, you can start working on it and getting through it, you know what I mean? And
incredible.
It's, again, it's not a straightforward, you're cured. It's a really long process. Well, it was for me.
Undulating hills.
Exactly that. And you know, some days I'd come out and I'd be like, Jesus, I'm absolutely bollocksed. I felt like I'd been in with Tyson Fury, you know what I mean? And then other days I'd come out, giving it best thing ever. Best thing ever, you know. So now what I do with the guy who I saw is once every couple of months or something, I'll send him a WhatsApp. How are you doing? Yeah, you'll say, everything all right? You want to come in? Are you okay? I'm like, no, I'm all right. Or I might go, yeah, do you know what? I'll come in and see you. I'm just feeling it creeping in a little bit.
And what would
and
you say
in the bud.
That feeling is to someone that's maybe questioning depression,
well,
whether it's a condition that they're experiencing? What did you feel?
For me, and everyone's different, so I'm not an expert on
this. We're not experts on this podcast.
No,
but we like to share experiences.
Exactly. I recognise that sometimes I might need a bit of a chat when, again, I start getting that little bit of burning inside my chest where I'm getting annoyed with things quicker than I should be.
Yeah.
Like, for instance, today, when I was up waiting for you coming up there, if that had been 3 or 4 years ago, you'd have turned up and I'd have been gone.
Wow.
Because I'd just been like, fuck this. What am I waiting here? And do? But that's the wrong way to be.
Yeah.
You know, so for me, it's little things that are nothing that really annoy me when I know, oh, something's not right here for me. Something's going a bit awry in my brain and I need to just talk about it. And as soon as I've talked about it for a couple of sessions, I'm all right. Now, again, for me personally, touch wood, it worked a treat for me and I've never needed much topping up.
Yeah.
But I'm not worried about getting the topping up because it's the best thing ever. And that's why, again, for blokes like me, I think where most people have this thing about therapy and depression and all this stuff, I kind of think, again, with someone like myself who is I see myself still now as a real sort of regular bloke kind of thing. Nicer house and a nicer car and a bit of money, but I'm still me.
Yeah.
And I kind of think, just for my own friends, I want them to look at me and go, well, he's all right talking about it. And he's, you know, he gets on with it. I don't want people to, especially men, to worry about it really and worry about what other people think, because it's literally just, it's as normal as just getting up in the morning and brushing your teeth for me.
I think it's really incredible to hear you speak about it in this way. I don't think you hear enough men speaking about it. And hopefully, even today, just people tuning in can take something away from that to know that you have got all of these other pillars of your life going on, but you still feel it.
And I also think as well, I'm sorry to keep banging on about bloody men,
yeah,
but that's my level of expertise because I am one. So, you know, I kind of feel as though I can speak about that. I think there needs to be some education as well as around people. You know, it's not always depression and it's not always mental health problems or anything like that. You know, sometimes it could be something you might be worrying about, something that it's not all that, you know, because this day and age online, and it's better because people do talk more about stuff, but I sometimes worry that, and I don't know how to put it, that people are thinking they're depressed or they're thinking they've got mental health problems or whatever, when it's not that. But I'm not an expert, I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
But sometimes I kind of think, I hope it doesn't go the other way where it's literally like, I'm depressed.
Yeah.
And they might not be, you know. So again, it's a massive, you know, it needs a lot of work doing on it, but I think talking about things does help regardless.
It's definitely a step in the right direction.
Of course it is.
How have you managed to stay so humble and true to your roots? Just hearing you speak about your hometown just now, you can tell you're incredibly passionate and proud of where you're from.
I think working classes, we always feel as though it might all be gone tomorrow. So I think if you have that in you, regardless of working in telly, working in your job, wherever you are, even when I worked at bloody Morrison's stacking shelves, or I worked in a leisure centre, I were always worried that it'd stop, or I won't get a wage, or I won't get this and getting the other. And I think having that in you, just you see the worst of things, and you see the best of things, and I think it's a nice way to be that, you know. Even my job, and I genuinely don't turn up to a lot of things, you know. Most events, you probably won't. I'll do Pride of Britain, yeah. The odd NTA. And that is like probably in all years I've been at it, I've been to them twice.
Yeah.
Not for any reason, it's just for me, I'm not really into all
You're
that.
Not into
it. You know what I mean? Yeah. I've not got a problem with it, but I'm just, and I think because I step out of it a lot, I still enjoy doing it. Mm. I think if you're in it 24/7 and going to every bloody event under the sun, yeah, and paparazzis and all the usual gubbins, for me, I'd be absolutely sick to death of it, yeah, but it's still exciting to me.
That's cool.
And even like, you know, doing this with you, if I see someone who I recognise off the telly or not, and I'm talking to them, I still think, bloody hell, this is a bit mad. You know, yeah, what I mean? We're doing this.
But, so but that's incredibly what, lucky but that, that's what, that you showed up today.
You've been asking long enough. I've been like going, I'm trying to get round to doing it. And I picked the worst day ever.
I even got a piggyback and I turned up late. But we'll blame that on the train line services. Lastly, Paddy, because we're all absolutely drenched and you've got kids and family to get home to, and I've got to get back on my late train to London. Do you have any life mottos or takeaways that you can share with our listeners?
Not really. I'm not really a philosophical kind of person, to be honest. I just think it's not a one sort of bullet point answer, but I just think this day and age, don't get too taken in by social media.
I think that's a really strong one. Probably the strongest one of the series, yeah, so far.
I just think, enjoy it. It can be good, but just remember, it's not everyone's nice, and most people who are on social media who give you their opinions probably wouldn't say that to your face. So always bear that in mind. You know what I mean? Or else society had just completely collapsed. Imagine if you're walking down the street and everyone went, I hate you, yeah, that shit, I wish you'd die, and you're like, oh, what, you know. But luckily, life's not like that. So I just say, just don't, especially younger people, just social media isn't the be all and end all of everything, really.
Don't let it define you, don't let it be you.
Exactly.
Be the true version of you.
Exactly.
Paddy McGuinness, it has been an absolute joy to get drenched, ride your back and see your local hiking spot.
And look at them, they're like corned beef. You've been wiping your nose with them all day, keep them.
I'll give you your snotty glass.
Keep them, I'll bill you after.
Monday Mile listeners, it is a wrap. I really hope you enjoyed that one. We're absolutely drenched, I've destroyed my trousers, my boots are brown. I'll bill you for that. It's a wrap. Have an absolutely wicked week.